For the first time in modern history, we have huge numbers of out and proud folks who are looking forward to getting the most out of life. And as the old saying goes, you're not getting any younger. And that, my friends, is a marvelous thing.
Today, family therapist and prep enthusiast Damon L. Jacobs joins us to celebrate as Feast of Fun approaches its 3,000th episode. Like a fine wine or a stinky cheese, this podcast is ripe for your enjoyment. Join us as we look back on 16 years of podcasting
and how to resist the temptation for media and yourself to turn to scandal, conflict, and fear-mongering for a little publicity.
Plus, two new studies say LGBTQ plus folks are up to 90% vaccinated against COVID.
OnlyFans says they're going to delete all the adult content from their site. In other words, everything.
Leave Britney Alone creator comes out as trans with their new name, Kara Cunningham.
And how can Lil Nas X be a power bottom and work with Taco Bell? I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Feast of Fun is celebrating 3,000 delicious podcast episodes by looking back at our show with some of our most fabulous guests. While we're hitting a major milestone in internet history by the sheer number of podcasts we created over the past 16 years, we aren't sitting back and taking it easy.
We've got a lot of yummy dishes waiting to be served. New podcasts, new Cooking with Drag Queen episodes, and a whole new live streaming show and contest. So we need your help to make it happen. Help us celebrate, create the streaming show, and keep this podcast Feast of Fun going strong into the future by visiting gofundme.com/feastoffun3000 and pledge your support today.
Thank you.
Dinner's ready. Ooh, look at you. You getting older.
We are.
And wiser and more fabulous. Mm. And you're developing deeper relationships with your friends and family, hopefully. And you're still here. I may have fought with lots of terrible people on Facebook, but I'm still here.
My dear.
And also joining us today is family therapist, prep proponent, video blogger, Damon L. Jacobs.
Hello.
Hi, welcome back to Feast of Fun. And last time you were here in the home studio was 12 years ago.
No, last time I was here was 3 years ago. But the first time I was here was 12 years ago. But the last time was we were here together in the home studio was for the Cher show. And
that's right. Yeah. If we could turn back time, we would talk about that experience.
A long 3 years feels like 30, but there you go. We're here, damn it.
Yeah, we saw the Cher show and then the musical, right?
Yes.
You treated us to that. Thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure.
Unfortunately, that show didn't do too well on Broadway, did it?
He did get a Tony. Oh, I believe the costumes.
Okay.
Received the Tony, but otherwise it didn't. It played out for about a year. It was not a long-term. It didn't have legs.
Although Cher has legs. And the first time you came on was to promote your book that you had written, Absolutely Shouldless. And that's about living in a world where you... explain it to the listener.
Well, living in a world where we change and challenge shouldless. Toxic yeah. shoulds, the shoulds that hurt ourselves, the shoulds about ourselves, about our weight, about our bodies, the shoulds that we project against others, and the shoulds that we put onto the world that cause a lot of pain and suffering.
And it's about managing your expectations. You're thinking, this is how it should be, and you have to really question yourself, why are you putting that expectation on it, right?
Right. The rigid and inflexible ideas that conflict with what's happening in reality.
A relationship should be like this, or I should have this at my job,
right.
That kind of thing.
I should have $1 million in the bank account, so I'm going to be bitter and miserable.
Until I get it.
Actually, when usually I hear it is a lot of young people today, I should be in a relationship, I should be famous before I'm 30. Part of it is because, you know, we have dreams and aspirations, and when the dreams are deferred, what happens to that raisin in the sun?
So if they're hopes or dreams or intentions or preferences, that's a beautiful thing. But when people have rigid and inflexible expectations or shoulds about their life, and then reality or a pandemic conflicts with those rigid and inflexible expectations or shoulds, that's where there's been a lot of pain and a lot of suffering. And that need not be.
And that's kind of like that Buddhist mantra, whereas, what is it? Wanting is the thing that's going to cause you displeasure.
Right.
Desire is the source of all suffering.
Right. Because it inherently suggests that you something outside of yourself, will lead you to peace or enlightenment. And a lot of Buddhism is saying exactly the opposite.
And, you know, I really enjoyed the book. I enjoyed reading and talking to you about it over these past 12 years because it always comes up because and you catch us in conversation all the time. Like, well, I don't believe in shoulds. And I'm like, and to be honest with you, I honestly have in my life tried to change that in my language and when I'm talking to people and talking about the things that I want in my life.
And how does that feel?
It should feel good.
Oh, but I don't know, like whether you and my mom were reading the same book or something, because when we were like 10 or 12 years old, my mom got onto a shouldless kick.
So I love your mom and yeah. She,
Patricia Furnos,
she was really on board. The yeah. first time we talked about this 12 years ago, it's derivative of cognitive behavioral therapy, which talks about should as one of about a dozen cognitive distortions that cause us suffering. My book is different in that it also ties that into homophobia, racism, sexism, transphobia, this whole idea that I should be different from who I am and how that informs so much of our own painful self-talk that harms us over time.
But then what am I going to talk about on Facebook?
Well, I use Facebook very intentionally to be a conduit for education, community, love, enjoyment, pleasure, and options. But clearly, that is not the MO for many people on Facebook.
But it's interesting in social media today that it's kind of being used as a tool by conservatives to, you know, get people to act against their own self-interest and also as a way to divide communities. And one really effective way is that people use it as a way to vent their frustrations in their own community against their own community. And those frustrations may be completely legitimate, but it doesn't yield a favorable outcome. It doesn't give people the ability to seek solutions. It just creates noise and discord.
And I guess when at the end of the day, all I can do is say I'm responsible for my own behavior. I can't control what anyone else does. I can't control what the powers that be at Facebook do or don't do. The only thing I have the right or the ability to do is to be the change I want to see. Right. And to act accordingly and consistently with the interest and the values I hold sacred, which is that we are a loving community. And when I say community, I mean that in the widest sense possible, that social media is really an opportunity to convey and communicate messages of love and hope and connection. And even if other people are not choosing to use it for that purpose, that is still the intention that I had used it for and was using Facebook 7 years, day and night, to do that, to talk about PrEP. When I was running, administering the Prep Facts group, which Michael Chansley is now doing, and he's been on the show, and he's wonderful.
You still pop in there, though.
I still pop in there from time to time. But the whole point was to use this forum, this incredible, historically novel way to communicate ideas and science about ways that our lives could be more connected and playful and pleasurable. And I still believe in social media's ability to do that.
You're more like Mary Tyler Moore on Rhoda. You're like, every now and then you show up and like, hey, everybody.
Like the Fonz on Laverne and Shirley.
Yeah.
Hey. AIDS. It's not my show, but I'm still going to command attention every time I walk in the room.
AIDS. If you want to prevent it, take some PrEP, Mrs. J.K.
Mrs. C.
Yeah. And so, you know, you've been through several pandemics now. Your second pandemic is the COVID pandemic.
Yeah.
And if you attend 5 pandemics, you get a free yogurt. There's 2 studies that were put out, one by Tegan and Sarah, and the other one by HRC.
Yeah.
So these are dubious sources because they tend to swing, you know, affluent and conservative.
They could be. Yeah.
But they were both making the claim that LGBTQ people are vaccinated up to 90% or so.
Something like 90%, yes.
In other countries, you know, their populations are vaccinated up to 90%. In the United States, conservatives are not getting vaccinated. And they're paying the price for it. They're dying.
Well, they say the pandemic at this point in time is a pandemic among the unvaccinated. When, you know, only 10%, they say 10% of gay people or queer people aren't vaccinated. But I wonder, my question about that kind of thing, like you said, was it could be, how are they doing this research? Who are they reaching out to? Is it, you know, are they including just people who are just, you know, men who have sex with men who don't identify as gay? You know, if you're polling the HRC members, they're probably going to be very affluent people, right?
I got Botox and the COVID vaccine at the same time.
And a lot of people who are HIV positive, you know, a lot of them are on their booster shots now.
Right.
You know, because they got early, you know, what was it, in January, December or January. And so 8 months later, their doctors are like, get your booster.
Now, yeah. And so I guess the question for you, Damon, because you're a person who's very passionate and you're also looking at the way LGBTQ people have reacted to the AIDS pandemic and how we're starting to react to the COVID pandemic. Do you think that there may be a benefit to being queer in this day and age?
I certainly think those of us that are familiar, that lived through the AIDS crisis, and even anyone younger who is familiar with PrEP and the concept of U equals U preventing and treating HIV, sort of already has a mental framework, sort of a template for understanding how to react to a crisis. Yeah. And an understanding of how to responsibly prevent and treat a really contagious virus. And sometimes that's just on a deeper conscious level. But all of us in the queer community who had one time have been at risk for HIV sort of get that's a thing. Mm-hmm. And we understand, I think we sometimes have a better framework for how to adapt to change in that way. Now, I'm not saying that's true for everyone. And I hope the study you mentioned is accurate. I'm guessing it is, or at least somewhat accurate, mm-hmm. that queer people are likely to be more vaccinated. And we certainly know now that people living with HIV today can get a booster shot in the United States, which is being recommended because of the Delta variant and perhaps the variants to come. I think we just have a tie-in to that, and we're more likely to accept science and facts as a reality that helps us to stay alive yeah. and have great sex.
Well, we're very well aware that if you get really close to somebody, they could kill you.
We've had to learn that. You know, and again, those of us that lived yeah. through the AIDS crisis remember right. when that was still
yeah.
a reality. That, like, if you get too close or you have sex or intimacy with someone, you might have to pay for that with
and,
your life.
And this pandemic was a little different because, you know, with, you know, back in the day with HIV and AIDS, is you had your little workarounds, right? You could, like, don't have penetrative anal sex. And you're pretty
glory
much
holes.
The chances of having like anal, you know, you're probably not going to get it. It's very slim. Whereas with COVID, if in the early days, just being next to them and breathing in their air could get you.
Yeah. Did you there on our Facebook group Feast of Fun? I posted, you know, the Peanuts cartoon of Lucy with a therapist office.
Yeah.
Only somebody just drilled a little glory hole and said glory hole 5 cents.
I wouldn't trust.
As someone who was inspired by Lucy as a child, that's very impressive.
Well, is that what made you become a therapist, Lucy?
Lucy Van Pelt and Marlena Evans. It was the two together.
Marlena Evans from?
From Days of Our Lives, because she started on the show when I was in kindergarten and would watch that show with my mom. Okay. And she was just beautiful, and she seemed to always help people feel better. And I was like, that's what I want to do.
Was she the one who was possessed by the devil?
She later did become possessed by the devil.
And are you possessed by the devil?
Well, that's, I think, a matter of debate.
Okay.
Well, your ex, some of your
depends
exes
who you ask, yeah.
Or people you had a ban on your Facebook group,
right? They would probably argue in favor that I am a possessed devil or demon that they wish to harm in some way.
Why does anybody yes. need to be kicked out of a prep facts Facebook group?
Well, if they don't believe in facts,
okay. So if somebody goes in there and they're saying, spousing like anti-vaxxer yeah. or saying, you know, because this is a normal reaction that happened. At the height of the AIDS pandemic, is that people are saying that the medicine was causing HIV and AIDS.
Right.
And it's very interesting, the human nature, that there's a reaction to this vaccine, that there are people saying that the vaccine causes COVID. And also, you know, at the height of the HIV pandemic, there was people who were like seeking out getting the infection because they were so anxious about the disease that they became self-proclaimed bug chasers. They wanted to get HIVs to get it over and done with. Well, and there's now people today that are seeking out catching COVID because they're so stressed about getting it, they just want to get over and done
with it. Why wouldn't they get the vaccine?
Now, I want to put that in a psychological okay. context.
Yeah.
Because there is a term for that. It's called learned helplessness. It's when you constantly Ooh. Tell someone that something bad is going to happen to them and you drill that in constantly, it lends itself to this defensive mechanism. It's like, fine, if you're going to do this or if this is going to happen to me, I just want to get it over with. And I remember feeling that way myself about HIV, just thinking, okay, this is pervasively something that I'm always going to have to worry about. It's always been there my entire adult life. At some point, I started to feel in my 40s. I just was like, I just want to get this over with because I'm so fucking tired of worrying about it all the time. And that was around the time I learned about PrEP and the results of the IPREX trial came out. which taught us how well Truvada worked to prevent HIV. And I thought, okay, well, here's a better way. Here's a different way to do this.
So you were on the cusp of being a bug chaser, and then the
pill I wouldn't say bug chaser. Okay. I would say that I was no longer wanting to give in to the fear of HIV every time I got fucked without a condom. I was so tired and exhausted of worrying about it, which I had been doing for over 20 years at that point, and said, enough is enough. And I relate that now to COVID and the Delta variant, because I keep hearing, if you believe the media keeps saying, well, even if you're vaccinated, you're still going to get the Delta variant. And I'm seeing the same thing happen again. People are saying, well, fine, just let me get it over with then. If this is going to happen to me anyway, let me just get the fucking Delta variant and get it over. Then I can produce the antibodies and be protected. And I really caution people about that, because the stats that the media presented are usually not put in context with the data as we know it. And what I mean by that is that if you go to the CDC website right now, they're going to tell you that they have a recorded 8,504 cases, breakthrough cases of COVID, where someone who was vaccinated required hospitalization or led to death. So that sounds alarming, right?
8,000 people.
8,504 people. Oh my God, that's a lot. And the media runs with that. But that's 8,504 people in the context of the 167 million Americans who are fully protected by vaccinations. So that's like less than 1%.
And those people are not likely to die at this point in time, right?
Is that very, very unlikely. They say that deaths among people who are vaccinated are about 99.99% protected from death. Mm-hmm. So there's like still 0.01%
chance. So it's just
like crap. Right. It's extremely, extremely low, but the media is going to take the 8,504 hospitalizations and say, see, this is still a danger, and lead people to that psychological defeat of saying, fine, if this is going to happen to me, I might as well get it over with. So I'm not going to take any reasonable precautions. I'm not going to do anything to protect myself, so I can just get this thing and get it over with. That's the problem with learned helplessness and how these things get talked about, whether it's HIV or COVID, when you constantly tell people you're a victim, always at risk.
So how do you unlearn helplessness?
You unlearn helplessness by learning facts and science. For me, with HIV, it was learning about PrEP. And realizing, oh, there's another option I have. If I want to have sex without fear and remain HIV negative, PrEP is a really, really great way to do that, which is why I started taking it 10 years ago.
Yeah.
With COVID, it's just learning the facts. We still know that vaccinations are protecting 99% of people from dealing with any severe conditions that require a doctor's attention or hospitalization. That's still a very high number.
And I feel like for me with PrEP, it's like, it's almost like it's more of an anti-anxiety pill than it is anything.
It sure is.
Because it's like, you know, just in case that happened, that situation arises where I'm in a situation and I might have sex and it's unprotected, I'm okay. And just knowing that that might happen like next week or 2 weeks or a month from now or a year from now, it just relieves so much anxiety.
And it is protected, by the way.
Yeah.
That is protected sex. Yeah. PrEP is protected sex.
Yes,
you're not unprotected if you get
fucked
on
mean.
PrEP. Yeah.
And in the journey of doing 3,000 podcasts here, you know, there has been a tension. There has been a struggle in the direction that we have taken the show in. I was reading some studies, actually, on what causes people to stop listening to podcasts or stop watching television shows or stop being fans of a musician. And the number one thing was when they stop learning something new.
Ooh.
And so if you want longevity in media or entertainment, you have to constantly be learning things, new things. And learning is painful. Learning means getting out of your comfort zone. Learning means failing.
And you know what's so interesting is that it seems to go both ways. So you look at a show, if we're talking like the realm of TV, you look at shows like White Friends, or, you know, it's like that was
White Friends.
The White Friends. That was a really consistent show for 10 years. It really didn't change much.
Right.
And it stayed consistent. People
and the
didn't
familiarity
learn
people.
People love the familiarity.
Yeah.
You look at a show like Murphy Brown or Roseanne that went on for like 9 or 10 years. They constantly changed and they lost a lot of viewers along the way. In the music realm, artists like Madonna or Beyonce are constantly changing and challenging themselves as artists, which I think is wonderful to watch. But then you have like Jimmy Buffett out there. He never changes his tune and he seems to always provide a comfort or familiarity to his fan base, which people love. And I love Pat Benatar so much, but she's basically been doing the same thing now for 20 years. She's doing the same shows on tour every summer. I go and see her as much as possible. It's very comforting, but she's not really openly pushing herself or challenging herself as an artist. I think this show is more, I would argue, more relevant and necessary today at 3,000 episodes than it was 16 years ago when you started out. I think the
world... That's a lot of responsibility to put on us.
No, it's not. It's not.
How so is it more like so now today than it was back then?
Because I think the art of conversation and listening is being lost. And I think in the social media verse where it seems like people are talking at each other or yelling at each other, you have continued for 3,000 episodes to provide not only an interesting conversation, but an example of what a conversation is. You listen to your guests. You talk with your guests. You engage your audience. You encourage people to think and talk and feel. And I think that is getting lost in our culture right now. I think
and
we
even
need
on other podcasts as well. So that's the thing that I'm like, as I commute to work and I've in preparing for the show and as we're launching new podcasts, I've started like just really aggressively listening to other shows. And to me, it's heartbreaking a little bit because people who want to do better and maybe they will someday, they don't. There's a lot of the hosts talking over their guests. And we're certainly guilty of that as well.
Sometimes you have to. Otherwise, they don't shut up.
Like me.
It's honest. They just will, and they'll repeat themselves over and over and over again.
And so the thing about it is there's a temptation or there's a positive feedback to bring in scandal, fear mongering, and conflict into the content you make in order to get people to pay attention and to become consumers. And when you consume the content, hopefully ad dollars come in, donations come in, merchandise sales come in, and you're able to sustain yourself better. And so I see this in my friends who work in, cable and broadcast news media. They're feeling pressure by the money people to, say, oh, COVID, the Delta variant's going to get you.
Link bait, right?
It's link bait. Yeah. And even doing this podcast, there have been times where Mark and I were like, okay, we're going to be mediating a conflict that exists in our community. The debate over the use of the T word for, transgender people, that Christian Siriano popularized and then Amy Poehler on SNL overused and made it into a big joke. And then everybody in America was saying the T word and, became a hot mess. And so Mark and I, as the most listened to LGBT news source at the time, mediated the top people. That was Parker Marie Malloy and Alaska Thunderfuck.
Lady Bunny.
And Lady Bunny.
I mean, all the drag queens, all.
Heckling
and the transgender critics, right? Yes. So we're coming on this podcast. And, what was interesting about it is that it actually was a healing moment for them. But for us, we received all the negative, all the horrible, burning bridges, being blacklisted, being banned and limited by anybody who had a side to take.
Yeah.
So it really limited our access, for example, to girls from RuPaul's Drag Race at that time as a consequence of that, because we were just wanting to have that conversation. Mm-hmm. And I remember Michelle Visage being alarmed and panicked when we called her a cosmopolitan woman instead of a biological woman. Because that was that thing took place. And as a consequence, that relationship doesn't exist anymore. A lot of relationships ended. And, we've said all this time, man's rejection is God's protection. But, it takes a lot of time sometimes to realize that. Mm. And when somebody rejects you, it is painful and it is.
And the bottom line with these words, too, it's like, when you use any kind of words, I'm not a word police. I'm not going to tell people you shouldn't use a word. Right. But I'm just saying it's like if you use a word, be prepared for those consequences, because you're going to use a word like that around somebody who's not going to appreciate it. And you are probably not going to be able to deal with the consequences of that.
But to facilitate these discussions in a compassionate, intellectual, nuanced way. And I know that you two have paid the price for that on many occasions, because just like the T word, you hosted legitimate arguments for and against, and you gave different people a respectful venue to talk about their feelings and thoughts about it.
And we were undecided about it, and we were trying to learn and navigate that change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because we came of age when the word was used by trans people, by drag queens, by people who are, I call it the tourists of the land of gender.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As we all are.
Right.
And who use this word to say that I look so feminine that I'm, you know, creating this illusion that I am somebody who from birth arose in this feminine way, you know, and for some trans people that what they felt that that was an attack on their own existence.
I mean, I went to Heclina's club in San Francisco every day, you know, it was, so I'm going to say the names because in case people are not, but it was called Tranny Shack. It was Tuesday nights at the Stud Bar. There's lots of it. I can't remember because the drinks were so strong, but I remember it was so much fun. It was subversive. It was camp. It was making fun of the status quo. All of the acts were satire in terms of making fun of something stupid happening in society. And it was just such a fun group of, Heclina just gathered such a wonderful group of performers, such a great community, and so much fun. And those are some of my, the best memories of my 20s was at Tranny Shack. So when I heard that Heclina and that term was being under scrutiny and attack, I was pretty surprised. Because to me, what that meant was love and fun and play. But then I listened to Feast of Fun, and I really got to hear some people say that for them, that wasn't the case. That for them, tranny was a very hurtful word, and it was causing them pain. So I learned a lot from that that I wouldn't have known if it was just social media and people screaming at each other. I don't really learn from that, but I learned from the show what was at stake and why it was really compassionate not to use that word.
And it was, you know, it was a conversation that we had over many, many podcasts for several months, if not years. So someday we'll probably try and compile some all of that so you can kind of get an idea of where that came from. But, you know, as long as we're talking about trans people, I should mention, because it's like, you know, we were hurt, but like, let's talk about the transgender community, really, because a woman was just murdered, Miss Coco, and she was the 34th trans person murdered this year in 2021.
So that issue is still not being resolved or addressed at all. And so we may stick, you know, transgender stripes into the rainbow flag, but being measured in less violence against trans
and
people.
We really need to figure out as a way as a community to come together and support trans women, especially trans women of color who, you know, are being victimized like this. I mean, they're losing their lives. We're complaining because we weren't able to talk to a RuPaul's Drag Race girl because of our conversation about this. And, you know, people are getting killed.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, in another conflict that we were mediating was the conflict of black representation in queer speech patterns, because people of color and queer people occupy very similar economic and cultural spaces. We tend to share a lot of words and languages. Girlfriend. You know what I'm saying? And so there was Shea Coulee, who was our next door neighbor, still is. And Kara Cunningham. And if you guys, who is Kara Cunningham? And please forgive me here. I'm dead naming somebody, but is better known by the stage name Chris Crocker. And so
she changed her name.
She changed her name.
Oh, that's new, huh?
That is brand new. Hot off the press, honey. Kara Cunningham and Shea Coulee were having a online battle, and Shay came on the podcast, and we were like, look, you know, anybody who's like excessively relying on using coded, you know, and I think there's even a new term for AAVE, African American Vernacular English, but, you know, slang, is that they're sort of like appropriating or, you know, being just a pest or annoying when they use that kind of language. But at the same time, you know, Kara Cunningham felt at the time that that was like her authentic self. And so Shea Coulee was using that as, you know, possibly as a way to draw attention to herself and lift her public profile. And at the same time, both Kara and Shay felt like we were not really taking their side in this situation. And we were both targeted by them as not being sympathetic to their viewpoints. So it was a situation where we're like, you know, you're not going to win any friends by having a controversial conversation on a podcast, because ultimately, you know, as the hosts, as the mediators of that, you're going to be, you know, the most scrutinized, the most targeted for that. And, you know, and I think that that we,
in my position, then, has always been, if it's coming from an authentic place and that's who you are, then that's how you speak. I've worked with black people, you know, in certain situations. And after a while, you do all end up using the same kind of vocabulary. And when you're not in that space, is it, you know, is it appropriate or not appropriate?
But I'm not, I don't look black,
no.
But I come from a Caribbean culture where black culture is, you know, a huge component of it. And so for me, it's like it's a sound, it's a representation, it's an it's sensibility that is very much part of my own DNA. And even though I don't necessarily appear to look like this, it is something that I respond to in a very favorable way. And I do notice myself, like when I get off work, sometimes my sassiness in my speech patterns is heightened because I'm relating to other people of color at work. And I'm talking to then white people who don't have that experience. And they're like, you, why are you talking that way? Why are you talking that way, Fausto? You know, and so it becomes a situation where like, and I imagine this is also the reality for any Latinx or black or native person, is when they're going, moving around from space to space, they have to become very conscious of how they talk and relate to other people.
Code switching.
It's code switching, right? And so we're having to negotiate and navigate that. So when you're doing a podcast, you know, you're like, well, what is the voice I want to use? You know, and part of it is it's and Oprah even got criticized about that, that she tends to mirror or reflect the who the guest is at the time. And to the point that it comes across as belittling them. And, you know, and you know, at a certain point, you're not going to win trying to please everybody. You have to really pursue your own passion and continue to learn and continue to discover new things. And, you know, if you're lucky and you have a good heart and good content, your audience will follow you to 3,000 shows and further.
And just, again, the fact that you both have been under such scrutiny and such pressure and criticism from all sides, and you're still here, damn it,
I'm still here.
Really shows to me what you're about, what your integrity is about, what your professional voices are about, and where your heart really lies. And I think that's important.
Thanks, girl.
I mean, especially as we're coming across this milestone of 3,000 episodes. I think that's a really important thing. And hopefully, I think, you know, the evidence will show that you are fair, you are balanced, you are rational, you are loving, and you're right. You can't please everybody with that.
Or maybe I'm none of those things. I'm just good at faking it.
No, Fausto. You are for real.
Only the real fans. This is a question we've asked many of our guests and ourselves. Mm-hmm. Should I do pornography?
Well, it's a question maybe every gay person grows up thinking is like,
should I be a sex worker? Should I be a stripper?
Should I?
Could you? Do you want to?
And, you know, during the COVID pandemic, people faced a lot of hardships economically, and they turned to OnlyFans or other similar websites as a way of transforming their sexual lives into hard cash. And with some people I knew, I developed my own Fausto algorithm, which is not scientific, but I discovered it was like on OnlyFans and other similar websites, you could see how many likes they had. And you can't have more than one account, and you can't, you know, because no one's going to get two of the same account to like something twice. Mm-hmm. So I noticed that some guys were getting like 50 or 100 likes on a post. You can't see what the post is.
So you can see how many posts they have, and then you divide it by how many likes, right? And so then you can figure out how many subscribers, right?
Exactly. And some of these guys who are not that cute, people I hooked up with myself, and I was like, you know.
You are not worth $3.99 a month.
You're not. They were charging $15 and $20 a month. And you guys say we're too expensive. Mm. And I was like, damn, this guy is breaking in probably $5,000 to $6,000 just by getting plowed on social media.
Yeah, good for them.
And I'm like, this is a game changer.
We're on the wrong gig.
Right? And so, you know, part of it is
podcast while getting fucked?
Well, and I also felt that that doing sexually explicit material does close off doors, because we live in a world that doesn't always understand or sympathize or allow access to people who've had that past. And, you know, we talked about this with actually Vicky Noe.
Oh, yes.
About this.
was she very jealous that you're here right now.
Vicky. Hey, Vicky.
Hi, Vicky.
She's like,
hi.
What are you doing in town? I'm like, he flew in on Facebook. She's like, he flew in to do the podcast. She's like, I'm jealous. I'm you should
sorry,
be.
Sorry, Vicky. No shoulds, though, but.
But so
sorry, Vicky. You could be
Vicky was really, you know, Vicky thinks, and it's a very nice compliment. She thinks that I'm capable of being an adult film star.
Yes.
And so she was like, Fausto, I'm very concerned. You know, you have a promising future. You have a very important voice. I really value what you do. I really urge you not to do adult films.
Did she? Oh,
she did.
What a mom. Well,
and I was like, Vicky, that's so sweet. You know, don't worry. I give it away. I don't charge for it. But so anyways, you know, this week, everybody is talking. The hot topic this week is OnlyFans announce that they are going to be deleting all adult content from their website. So in other words, they're deleting the site. As a result, because they're saying that the credit card companies, MasterCard, which they're not everywhere you want to be. Now it's almost everywhere you want to be without pants.
Or without a dick in your ass.
With pants on.
With pants on.
With pants, yeah. With no other naked.
And so, yeah. So MasterCard said to OnlyFans, listen, we don't want to be a payment terminal for you guys if you're doing adult content.
And I thought it was one other major company. I thought it was Visa.
It may be Visa and MasterCard are, I believe, are the same company. Same.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. So that, yeah. Why do these?
But before you weigh in on this, part of it is that the company is valued at $1 billion or more.
Wow.
And so they're wanting basically to sell it off because the value is not the adult content or even the subscriptions. It's the accounts, the active accounts. Mm-hmm. And so selling that to a third party, or, you know, liquidating it or merging with somebody else. Like, you know, somebody made money when MySpace went bankrupt. And part of it is they're intentionally bankrupting OnlyFans in order to get cash and get out.
Is it like the movie The Producers,
yeah,
right?
It
where
is.
They like oversell it. And then they're just like, sorry, we're not worth anything now.
Well, in The Producers, you know, it is kind of like a failed startup where they're getting money to do their business and the business fails and they keep the
and there's a
money.
Lot of that happens in the internet world. There's always people that, like, especially we're in the podcast world, so there's always people who are like creating these podcast networks and they're inviting us to get on there and do that kind of stuff like that, and they don't really offer you any money, but what their idea is to build up a huge chunk and then get sold to a big company like Spotify.
Yeah. And yeah. And as a consequence of that, I think OnlyFans, that may be what is at play here. We just don't have enough evidence or information about it. Because OnlyFans, just like the content on it, is a big wall.
But there's also, like, you know, they've had rules about, like, you have to show documentation if you're filming, like, outside. Because, like, people have been having sex outside and, like, on other people's property and other people's Airbnbs. And there was also a question of whether, is it a place where child pornography is being distributed as well. And so those can carry a lot of, you know, legal fines and whatnot.
Consequences
because of that. And so the banks don't want to get involved in that because will they be held liable?
Yeah.
So anyway, Damon.
So, okay. So much there. I guess I don't always understand the ins and outs of what's happening financially on the internet. It just seems to me from my standpoint that it looks like credit card companies trying to censor content and trying to censor explicit sex and having the power to do so. And I still don't understand why a credit card, a big conglomeration like MasterCard, would have the ability to determine our consumer preferences and consumer consent. I always come down on the point of view of that sexuality is a beautiful thing, that fucking is a beautiful, healthy thing. And if people want to share that and show that and commodify it, it's their choice to do so. People can decide not to buy it if they don't want to, but it's there. And we have a right to share it and to sell it. And I think so many traditional marriages are basically sex work anyway. So why not use the internet, especially during a pandemic, to empower people? I know a lot of sex workers were using OnlyFans because it was a much safer and viable way to be able to get money and stay alive during the pandemic when it was really, really unsafe to actually be having sex in person with another human. So to take that away from people, why do these credit card companies have the power to do this? You know, we saw Tumblr, we saw Pornhub, we saw all these companies get, like, stripped of their power because of explicit sexual content. And I
user-generated explicit content with Pornhub. It wasn't the issue wasn't that they had pornography on it. It was that it was pornography made by everyday people.
Right.
That's the nexus here.
Which for me is the interesting.
Because they still have. Well, it was that, but their reasoning was that it was like content made by everyday people who didn't have the licensing. You know, all models are 18 or over. We have the right. We own the property that we're filming in. You know.
And so it's basically this idea that individuals who are not attached to a major corporation can't make money and profit off their sexuality. And I think that's just really messed up. And I like, when does that end? Like, why are we continuing to give MasterCard that kind of power?
Well, and that kind of power is at play with cryptocurrencies, right? So even though Elon Musk tried to torpedo cryptocurrencies from his appearance on Saturday Night Live and was pretty effective at knocking all cryptocurrencies' value down by at least 50%. It's recovered in the past month because of situations like OnlyFans, where people are starting to see there's going to be an economic demand for using cryptocurrencies, a decentralized way of power. And it's interesting that Venmo and Cash App have now adopted cryptocurrencies as an alternative form for exchanging money between people. So now if I buy a pizza and you want to split the cost of it with me, you can pay me in Bitcoin using the Cash App or Venmo. And we do accept that on Feast of Fun, Cash App at Feast of Fun or Venmo Feast of Fun.
And do they have to know the last?
They don't need to know nothing, honey. No? You can send me cryptocurrency through Cash App or Venmo.
All right.
That's amazing. And yeah. I still don't totally understand, but I'm usually like 10 years behind all this stuff anyway.
But the catch is that Venmo and Cash App are still tied to these banks. So when we develop, you know, a PayPal, basically, that's only cryptocurrency based, and even a company like Coinbase is based out of the United States. And even these apps that you download onto your phone are based out of Apple, that's based in the United States. When you're, you know, in terms of like, you know, the Google's platform, Android, you know, the fact that you can sideload, and you still can sideload apps onto the iOS, it's just more complicated, more difficult.
What do you mean sideload?
Sideload means to install an application that's not been approved by the app directory.
Oh, so I can put an app on my iPhone that's not part of the iPhone?
Yes, but it has to be, you have to install a profile first. And so, and a profile is a piece of software that lays on top that allows, this is very technical here, but at the short story of this, I know.
That part sounds good, laying on top. That's what only
the consequence of this is that there is a lot of pressure to decentralize and move economic power and control away from the United States.
That sounds good.
And Europe.
That sounds like a
Russia,
good idea.
And China.
That sounds like a good idea. Now, to get back to Vicky's point, I may have a different take on that. Because I do think when we were growing up, I know for me as a therapist, if I was exposed doing a naked picture or an explicit video, that would be like the ruin and possibly the end of my career. And states could have taken away my license for violating moral codes or whatever. I do think in the last 10 years, there's a lot that has changed. I think sex videos have become so ubiquitous. I think people with the iPhones are taking so many videos, just personal, you know, like in their own intimate encounters, in the safety and consent of their own bedroom or living room or kitchen or wherever, or front lawn, that it seems like there's a trading and a passing of so many videos of people sharing intimate sexuality together. It just doesn't seem to me like such a big deal anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I'm starting this interview series.
Teachers are losing their jobs still, aren't they?
So I think people who work with children and minors are still at risk. And it always comes back to the children, right? I'm putting that in quotes. It always comes back to slamming consensual adults for having sex because you got to protect the kids.
Yeah.
And I don't agree with that argument.
Adult porn.
Right. So I think teachers are still in a precarious position, or anyone who works with children on a regular basis is still has to be really, really careful about that stuff. But I'm starting an interview series where I'm interviewing people in a bathtub naked. Mm-hmm. And part of the reason why I wanted
you
to
should
do
call
that,
it Splish Splash.
Splish Splash. Well, I call it Tub Talks with Damon. And it's not, it'll be launching in September. But the reason, one of the reasons I wanted to do this is because it feels very liberating for me to be naked in a bathtub with someone doing an interview and to know that I can put this out into the world and it's okay. I'm not doing anything that violates my personal code, my professional code, my moral integrity. This is just a naked conversation in a bathtub, totally like PG
but
rated, and it feels quite
showing,
liberating to do it.
You're not showing the nudity.
So my genitals are not showing. Yeah. The guest genitals are not showing. But you can see like half of our bodies, and we're definitely naked in a tub together.
So you're going to invite women to do it? And
absolutely.
And are you going to put bubbles on their nipples?
I am inviting anyone of any gender who wants to sit naked with me in a bathtub and hold up their end of a conversation for 10 or 15 minutes to come to my tub and have a seat.
But here's where you get into the issue. If you have a woman who's topless, where are you going to post the video?
Well, we're going to see. I plan to release these on YouTube.
Yeah. Well, so, you won't be able to do that there.
So if a woman shows her breasts on YouTube,
you cannot do that.
They'll remove it.
They will remove it.
That is just so insane.
You have to blur the nipples.
Well, I'm not
going
to do that.
Bikini tops, pasties, rubber duckies.
So we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. Maybe I'll come to you and understand cryptocurrency so I can do it. Well, it just seems ridiculous to me. Yeah. And such a double standard. In New York State, you know, women can go topless because men can go topless. It's gender discrimination to say men can do something that women can't. So I don't understand that policy that you can show. I can show my chest on any
because
social media
YouTube
platform, but women can't.
And Facebook are not public spaces.
All right.
They're a privately owned company. Well, they're publicly traded private companies.
Well, like here in Chicago, you can't, like, a woman can't, like, lay out topless. I mean, they do.
She did yesterday.
Yeah, but you could get fined, as far as I know.
Wow.
Well, unless you're at the gay beach, because cops never come to the gay beach.
Well, but that's gender discrimination.
Yes, of course.
And
it is.
I don't
free the nipple.
Get it. I don't get it in terms of public policy or protection or I don't understand. Maybe it's because I'm not a straight guy who necessarily has a reaction to breasts. I just think human bodies are beautiful. I don't feel sexually attracted to all human bodies, but I think all human bodies are beautiful, and I don't understand why some get to show parts publicly that other people can't. It's
I like nice tits.
Agreed, but they also
They
also have a law here in Chicago, which was very disappointing to me, is that they had construction workers, you know, male construction workers have to wear a shirt.
What?
Before,
terrible.
You know, in the 80s and 90s, they could, or in the 90s or whatever, they could be shirtless. So you'd have hot roofers, tan bodies, glistening in the sun. No more. It's all t-shirts now. And you're just like, God damn.
Criminal.
It is. It's absolutely criminal.
Damon, so you basically have your titties out.
Yeah.
And in a nice tub.
Wet and soapy.
But you have a nice deep tub, like, you know, like Whitney Houston. Drowning level.
We're not going to be doing that in the tub.
But I like, because we were talking about this, is like, I want to go to the Beverly Hills Hotel.
Yeah.
And I guess there was that people are wanting to film themselves or photograph themselves in the bathtub where Whitney Houston drowned in. And so the hotel has changed the numbers on the doors.
They changed the numbers, but you can find
but
the
you can find
it's very
room,
easy to find.
Like online.
Yeah, you can easily find it online. And if you're actually on the hall, you can easily see the room that's like separate from the other rooms. I've been there.
But if you call and request that particular room,
usually, I think, will tell you no.
Oh, really?
I don't know. I actually, this was years ago, so I don't know what they're doing now if someone tries.
But, you know, we're gay, and gay people work at that hotel, and so they'll hook you up if you want. If you got to find the gay
person.
And
you show up and be like, I like a nice deep tub, you know, one where a celebrity could have an accident. A terrible accident. And you know, I do feel like we have a shitty bathtub.
Our tub is terrible.
It's terrible.
It's small.
It's small, and it's like, how... Like a foot of water?
It's a builder's grade tub is what they call it, that kind of thing.
It's
so.
Garbage.
Well,
but
the point of
a
tub
nice
talks,
tub,
though,
yeah.
is
yeah.
the ability to have an intimate conversation about, like, what we were saying before, about different standpoints on what's happening in the world, on growing older, aging, peace, Black Lives Matter, pleasure, surviving anal cancer, all these different topics that so many people I know are so skilled at discussing and being able to have these conversations in person. I think I'm missing in-person discussions and interviews in this pandemic world. And I'm so happy to be here in this home studio with you two because I've missed you so much.
But Is it possible to have a deep conversation in a shallow tub?
Yes, absolutely. Just wait till Tub Talks with Damon comes out, and then you'll see absolutely the answer is yes.
And does the nudity help with the intimacy, or do you think that people get a little more, I'm naked on the outside, so I have to build a wall on the inside?
People, when they're naked, let their guard down more. They're more open and vulnerable about their feelings and their experiences, and I think that's always been the case. Oh,
so go to a nudist party if you can. I went to one that, like, before the pandemic happened. It was fun. It was just a group of like 20 gay men just hanging around naked, and some people were like, there was musical performances. It was great.
I was like outside of the car. I'm like honking the horn. I'm like, Mark, let's go. I had just gotten off work.
Yeah.
And, you know.
And people are like, is Fosse going to come in?
And I'm like, no. I'm like, I've been stripped naked by my coworkers and customers. You know what I'm saying? It's like the last thing when you had a hard day at work is getting naked, a bunch of stone strangers, mm-hmm. and they're all like looking at you, and you're like, I'm like, nah, only fans, you know? If I'm going to be gawked at for being naked at this point in my life, I want to get paid.
So, well, but it feels so, it's weird at first, and then within 2 minutes, it's so natural and normal. It's just like,
I mean,
whatever.
I'll go to a nude beach or a nude retreat and stuff like that, you know, and I'm certainly no stranger being naked on stage in the 90s. And there's even merchandise, Caucus Cool, with my dong hanging out.
Sweet.
All those t-shirts are sold, but you can put that on, can you put that?
I don't have the design. I don't have the design, yeah.
Oh, that's too bad.
But, so, we could recreate it, you know? We could do that.
We could.
You know, that might be a nice anniversary present.
So, David, you're also, one of the areas that you work in is aging. And aging for gay men in particular. And you have a new website, The Joy of Gay Aging.
Yes, thejoyofgayaging.com. So that's, I just turned 50. And
happy birthday,
thank
belated.
Thank you. And I think.
And you can still kick it, stretch
it, and kick it, and bend it over. And I think this is such an incredible moment culturally and historically. We've never really had a cohort, a generation of gay men age up, become seniors in a time with this level of relative social acceptance, medical advancements, legal protections. We've never seen this historically before. And I think that really gives us this opportunity. I say us, like all of us listening to this of all ages, it gives us this opportunity to say, what is this going to look like? Since we don't have a blueprint, we can create a blueprint that's about play and community and respect and having difficult conversations in respectful ways. That's about connection and empowerment and purpose and meaning. Or we could just kind of do what we've often done, which is to fear getting older, you know, feel isolated and separated and lonely and anxious and afraid and addicted and say, like, this is a miserable experience. Did I survive HIV for all this? Is that all there is? I've seen people approach aging with trepidation, which is so ironic considering we are so fucking resilient. We have been through, as you said, two pandemics now. We have survived HIV and AIDS and COVID. What do we want to do with the quality of life, given that we've been given the gift of quantity?
Well, the big obstacle that I'm noticing is that we're going to have a lot of old fags without kids.
Yeah.
And you're going to be needing, like, without money, too. We're going to need, like, retirement homes that don't
suck. And they're building some. They
sure
have
do.
Some they have here, you know? In Chicago. The wait list is very long.
Yep. Cathedral City in California. I believe Portland or in Oregon has a senior queer housing space.
LA,
I mean, it's going to become more and more as the need develops. There will be more and more supply. I'm certain of that. Well, but I just think it's uncharted territory. Yeah. And I think that gives us this opportunity to create and play. And that's what I want to sponsor. That's what I want to do.
And the thing, too, I was reading some stuff about, like, Sweden's response to COVID, because they really kind of, like, threw the old people to the dogs, really, as far as COVID goes. And one of the doctors was saying, you know, we're seeing, like, older people seen as disposable, and it's something that people from all ages need to realize that that's not the case, and it affects everybody, and it might not affect you now, but it's going to affect you someday. So we really need to kind of change our attitudes and make sure that we value older people. And a lot of, you know, unfortunately, because we live in a capitalistic society, I think part of it is we throw them out because they're not necessarily of value anymore because they're not working. But then you look at also to the statistics, and I think it's like something like 60 or 80% of all the people who volunteer are seniors. So they're out there, they're contributing. They might not be contributing at a job, but they're doing some kind of volunteer work.
Well, there's also this reputation that the Scandinavian countries have of being this, like, egalitarian, caring, altruistic society. And to some degree, you know, they do have social health care. Mm-hmm. They do are actively trying to fight racism in their cultures, which is a huge problem. As much as it is in the United States, they also have problems with fascism and Nazis over there. But like I was thinking about this is like the members of ABBA, which is, you know, synonymous with Swedish culture, all were highly at risk for dying of COVID. You know, yeah, like Bjorn Alvarez is 73 years old today.
Oh, well, then happy you birthday. Could also say like
Annie
Fleetwood Mac
and Benny Anderson, 71, yeah. 72. You know, they ain't spring chickens. In fact, there was a music video that was sort of like using ABBA's old music. And so now they're using puppets to of them as younger selves, you know, to do the music. And I'm thinking, I'm like, you know, Sweden, take care of ABBA. You know, ABBA's taking care of you.
I'm sure they have. I'm sure ABBA is very well off in their mansion somewhere.
Well, that's the thing. Is like,
didn't
you
one
know,
of them die? I think one of them died, though. Didn't one
no.
of them,
I think the drummer
died. Yeah, I think he was living in Spain and he stepped on a rake.
Oh, and the rake, yes.
Killed him, stabbed him,
and
bled to death.
And he bled to death on his lawn. Yeah.
What
not
a way to
the, not the four members of ABBA, but their backup.
Oh,
their drummer.
Yeah. Is that who it was? Okay.
Yeah. So Agatha, Bjorn, Ani and Benny, which spell out ABBA, are still alive
today. Good. That's good to know because I still want the reunion. But, you know, so there's a lot that I don't know about these policies. Yeah. But what I know is that loneliness is an epidemic, that our own Surgeon General, Vivek Murthy, mm-hmm. has talked at great length about loneliness as an epidemic whose side effects are equivalent to smoking 15 cigarettes a day.
Oh, wow.
That being touch starved and being isolated from other humans it lowers our cortisol levels. So that means it often results in higher blood pressure, heart attack, stroke, that we know babies need to be held, that babies need to be swaddled in order to grow and to thrive. And my question is, what age does that not become true?
Well, I was reading about the high blood pressure is the like one of the top killers of gay men over the age of 50.
The silent killer.
Yeah. But it's not about everyone's thinking high blood pressure is going to give you strokes or heart attacks. It can do that, but it's your kidneys that go first because the kidneys have very sensitive little capillaries.
Right. So touch, human consensual, loving, compassionate touch reduces cortisol levels. That we know. We're still needing to, you know, we still need more data about what touch starvation looks like. But I think part of getting older and part of what we are able to do as a community is to form ways that people can find and give and receive consensual, loving touch. That's not necessarily sexual. It's not sexual, but it's more about just that beautiful human connection that makes life, this hard, hard, painful world, so meaningful and relevant and enjoyable. And I think we're going to have more really intelligent talks about that as we get older as well.
People are up in arms about the host of Jeopardy, who everybody wanted
LeVar Burton or
Jordy LaForge. Mm-hmm. And instead they stuck this guy named Mike Richards.
But I think they pulled him out though.
He basically was asked to leave because, you know, he posted a lot of questionable content.
Well, it wasn't part of the hashtag Me Too kind of stuff.
And so Mayim Bialik, who everyone's like, she's a neuroscientist. She has and she's been an anti-vaxxer.
Really?
Yeah.
No.
And so people are like, what are you doing with this show? And even Alex Trebek said, I wanted a person of color. I wanted a black woman to be on the new host of the show, you know, because part of it is like, white supremacists look at the host of game shows as a symbol for their purity, for their intelligence and superiority. And so they want white men hosting these shows. And the rest of America is like, we want to see diversity. We want to see ourselves reflected in the host. And, you know, LeVar Burton.
My MBL has gone on the record saying that I am not an anti-vaxxer and that my kids are vaccinated.
But no, but go get digging deeper. She's only doing that because of the controversy. She wants to be the host of Jeopardy.
This is from February 11, 2015.
I'm telling you, she's also backpedaled again. And she's like, we are a she said in one interview, we are a non-vaccinated household. I understand that would be very controversial, but you have to respect our decision to make it. And I'm just like, okay, so you've not been vaccinated against polio? Measles? Okay. And we want this person to be the host.
Well, she said her kids are vaccinated back in 2015.
Yeah, she's, if you go in deeper, she is paddles okay. back and forth between that statement as she gets a lot of negative backlash from it.
You know, they
and she may be lying about the fact that her family is vaccinated.
They filmed Jeopardy at Sony Studios, which is just down the street from the high school I went to, just so you know, in Culver City. I know that's totally.
And Mark's
random.
Auditioned a lot for Jeopardy
In Culver twice. City.
No. Just the online thing. They've never called back.
Oh, but I'm always. He'd like, be great.
I'm not as good as some of these people. I'm just like I would have to bone up on some of this stuff. You know, I have to bone up on my Shakespeare.
Speaking of OnlyFans, you have to bone up.
Yeah.
What about Laura Coates? I thought she was in the running, and she is a really like she fills in for Don Lemon all the time. She is smart. She is beautiful. She's funny. I thought that she was in the
that's
running.
That's who Alex Trebek wanted.
Yeah,
and she may wind up getting it now because of the controversy with Maim and with Mike Richards and. And I guess LeVar Burton's like, you know, I'm not going to take the role. Instead, I'm going to take a teaching position at a black historical college. That's a reference to a sitcom.
Okay.
But, you know, it, part of it is like, you know, even black people are like, this is your mess. I don't want to deal with it. You know, leave me out of it. But I think, you know, certainly LeVar Burton is an astounding actor and personality. And I mean, he's, you know, Reading Rainbow. You know, he's Star Trek. He's Kunta from, you know, Roots. I mean, he's an extraordinary actor with a legacy, and he would be a wonderful host for the show. But unfortunately, you know, they had other plans.
Did I ever tell you that I used to...
Like Sex in the City.
Me and a friend in San Francisco used to talk, like, we wanted to do a porn version of Hollywood Squares. Mm-hmm. So, like, you would appear on the show, and if you got three in a row, you got to have sex with the three people in a row that you chose. So you had to be really strategic about how you were answering the questions and who you were asking.
Because you get stuck with Bruce
Vilanch. Right, right. But then you would, like, do that, and then the first part would be the game, and then the second part would be the sex. But it would be, like... It wouldn't be professional planned sex. It would just be like group sex with four people. And that would be the really interesting part. Because that was always more interesting to me about like porn was seeing people connect versus this rehearsed sort of choreographed thing.
Oh, so you like it when the doorbell rings and the pizza guy opens and that first interchange, all that kind of stuff.
I don't like the stage stuff. I don't like seeing people have sex who clearly don't care or like each other. But I just thought this idea of like playing Hollywood Squares, getting three in a row, and then you go off into the room and we're going to record what happens. I just thought that would be like really fun.
Hollywood Queers.
Yeah.
Well, I always find it, you know, in adult films, the most sensuous aspect is when they take their, or in real life is when the clothes come off.
Right. It's the sensual part.
And if you're hooked up with somebody who like opens the door and completely naked, you're like, oh, the candy's already been unwrapped.
Yeah.
Great. It's all sticky.
Yeah. Well, that's so I'm not a big connoisseur of porn, not for moral reasons, just because I don't find most of it sexy. But what I did like, which is now all gone, is what people used to put up on XTube. It's just when people were just recording their own fun, playful, sensual encounters. And
jacking into a glass of water.
Well, or, you know,
that was a big thing.
Fucking each other or kissing. And, you know, sometimes you have the clumsiness. You have the like, oh, stop. You know, you would have those moments where you have to communicate with each other. And I thought those were really beautiful. And those were all gone because of the last time the credit card company said you can't do anything anymore. Those are gone out of X2. But those are the things that I find stimulating or interesting.
And if you want to innovate, you know, for all these, shady, fraudulent, queer content internet startups, they could create a decentralized cryptocurrency funded, user generated content for sexually explicit content.
Well, why don't you
it
do that?
It doesn't exist. I got no money and like, I got no time.
Feast
but I'll
of
be on the board of directors.
Feast
if you
of
want.
A lot of fun.
Yeah.
Feast of money, honey.
Well, what we are wanting to do to celebrate 3,000 shows is we're trying to raise $3,000 to help us get equipment to do a streaming series where Cooking with Drag Queens goes in a brand new direction. Mark and I will be the drag queens, and our guests could be all our fabulous guests.
Anybody from the walks through the door.
Anybody. So,
too bad,
with drag
too
queens
bad Pete
continue.
Burns is no longer with us. I'm sure he would have loved to have been a guest.
You know, aww. That's an interesting thing about Pete Burns and Amanda Lepore. For as little time as they spent on this podcast, They are some of the guests that we get asked about the most.
They made an impact in those 20 minutes.
They're like, Fausto, I appreciate the opportunity, but I have to get going now. And I was like, you've just talked to us for about 10 minutes. Right. It was woefully short with Amanda Lepore, but you know, I don't think she really wants to be interviewed by anybody. In terms of Pete Burns, that interview was set up by, who was it exactly? It was a friend of theirs who, you know, is a fan of the show and said, you must come on Feast of Fun, you know? And at the time, Pete Burns was famous for his appearance on Celebrity Big Brother UK.
But we, as Americans, we didn't know him from that.
We just knew him from
like, you spin me right round, baby.
Yeah, dead or alive, mm-hmm. right? It's the guy with the non-binary person with the eye patch. And so Pete Burns, since then, has had a lot of plastic surgery and piercings, and to the point of excess that their health was in question, in danger, and was told by their manager, by their spouse, by their friends, you get more piercings and more plastic surgery and you will die. And Pete Burns used the podcast, because, you know, we tape for an hour, as an excuse to sneak away to go get more surgery and piercings. So Pete, like, talked to us for about 15 minutes as he was driving to the clinic to get more work done. I guess we found out about this afterwards.
I think maybe we talked to him right after it was done.
No, it was during, before,
okay.
Right before. And then it's like, Dolly, I have to get going. I have things to do. Blah, blah, blah. You know,
yeah,
hung up. You can listen to it on feastoffun.com/plus.
And then the person that set it up was just like, oh my God, he totally just used that as an excuse to go off and get piercing. I'm like, live your life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Live your life.
If I can't be free, I don't want to be in this world. And, you know, and for some people, it's like that person who had plastic surgery to look like a cat. They were very happy in some ways because they were like, even though they put their health and their physical safety at risk, they pursued their dreams at all costs.
It's interesting because I think a lot of people who typically do bullshit interviews come on your show and they're not expecting you to be really intelligent, informed, and engaged, and to actually engage them in a real conversation. And I've heard people who get really thrown off because, oh, I wasn't expecting to be talk to smart people today. I don't know what to say.
Carol Channing.
But Carol Channing is just
Carol Channing.
Beautiful.
Corn?
And she rose
I don't remember having corn.
She rose to the occasion. She really appreciated your essence and what the show is about.
It was definitely one of the probably high moments of this podcast for me personally was Carol Channing correctly pronouncing my name.
Yes.
Which a lot of people have
Fausto.
A hard time. They say Fausta, like pasta. And she's like, Fausto. And I was like, the goddess has touched me.
But I have to tell you, I still learned one of the most important lessons of my life from this show.
What's that?
With Zach Stafford. Because if you really want to go out and you really, really want a bottom?
Yeah.
I learned from this
show Chipotle.
how to find the tops. You go to Chipotle, thanks to your show and Zach Stafford.
Oh.
You go to Chipotle and you just, you know.
That's where all the
Or you go to the bar next to Chipotle and then you know that's where the tops are.
Oh, because the bottom's.
Because you can't bottom. Away. I learned that from the show that you cannot bottom.
I'm when sorry. You I've been eating Mexican food my entire life, so I don't understand what the big deal is with beans and bottoming.
Well, because, you know, for a lot of gringos, it's, you know, beans, it's not an everyday kind of food, and it's just like it can produce a lot of gas. Maybe it's, you know,
unpredictable
bowel movements, that kind of stuff.
Did you have gas?
Yeah. I just share this in the Feast of Fun community. It was a tweet out by Taco Bell. Taco Bell is working with Lil Nas X. He's like a, they didn't say brand ambassador. They brought him on to, I forget exactly how they worded it, but basically, so, you know, this self-described bottom is working with Taco Bell, which I'm sorry, but, you know, Chipotle is a step above Taco Bell. So if you're worried about bottoming and eating Chipotle, you better be doubly worried about bottoming and eating Taco Bell. So,
yeah, because Taco Bell, I guess, you know, is more likely to give you an indigestion.
Well, it's, you know, maybe, you know.
I don't know. Anytime I've ever, this is not a endorsement
science.
Or, but or I can't stand their food. Taco Bell is garbage. All, you know,
Taco Bell is,
I think less of you as a person when you say, oh, I love Taco Bell. And I'm just like, what? Chipotle's not good enough for you? Oh, Mexican food isn't good enough for you? Oh, you have to go to the widest version of this.
Well, you know, that's where they're at.
The most compromised milk toast garbage.
And, you know, for some people, depending on where you live in the United States, it might be the only ethnic food you can get. I remember when the Taco Bell opened up in my hometown and we were just like, let's go to Taco Bell. And we just thought it was great. And then I started eating Mexican food and I'm just like, this is not as good as real authentic food.
We had the same experience in Puerto Rico, yeah. But the first time we went to Taco Bell, we knew it would be our last time going to Taco Bell.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah. No. We were like, what is this? This is not even food. It's like, it's garbage.
In Southern California, yeah. We had Poppin' Taco. And that was probably, yeah. Do you remember? Did you
I don't know like, about that, but you know, there's been, you know, Taco Cabana, Teca Molina in Texas. There's, Casa de Mi Madre in Puerto Rico. I mean, there's a lot of like legendary, amazing Mexican franchises and chains. You know, and at this point, as Republicans feared, and their fear was correct, there is a taco truck in every corner in America. And so, which I think is a great thing. And so, you know, Mexican culture is American culture and vice versa. And there's food everywhere in the United States to enjoy. So for you to go to Taco Bell, Taco Bell got to step their pussy up, honey. Because right now they are... You know, they're just into they're transphobic and bottom phobic and
why are they transphobic?
I don't know. I just say that.
What?
But it is. It's like I think Taco Bell's garbage.
Okay. Yeah.
And Vice Quigley Bones would agree with me.
He was named Chief Impact Officer at the fast food chain, which will play out with a menu of activities and collaborations from his album Montero. So that album where he fucks the bottoms for the devil. So that's basically, yeah, Taco Bell is bottoming for the devil, right?
Well, if you go to eat at Taco Bell, you will be bottoming for the devil in the toilet. Because it's they're not going to come out as spicy as it went in.
By the way, I think Little Nas X is like... like gives me hope for the future.
Absolutely.
I just love his, I love what he's doing. And I love like, you know, to me, I learn a lot from how he reacts to people on Twitter. Like this is someone who knows what he's doing, who knows how to react to the hate. Mm-hmm. Like I look to him to respond, you know,
do you think he's getting training for this or is this a situation where, the reason he's so successful is because he's naturally adept at dealing with these kind of issues.
I would guess some of this just has to be naturally inclined or, you know, unfortunately, he probably has survived because he's been criticized and had to deal with so much adversity as a black queer person his entire life that now it's just secondhand to just deal with
it. You know, in terms of Lil Nas's shift, because it is a shift, we think about like queer black culture and representation in music and online, and it's usually like conflict oriented. And it's usually the conflict is within your communities. This rappers dissing other rappers or drag queens, you know, insulting other drag queens. Right. Mm-hmm. In this case, it's Lil Nas and engaging with racist, homophobic, transphobic people.
Yes.
And that's a profound shift. And in terms of his own communities, like very gracious and very compassionate. And I'm just like, he's almost too perfect.
Well, there is buckets and buckets of money and power behind him at this point in time.
And I hope, I pray he is taking care of himself, that he has a therapist or friends or both that are able to hold him. Because that is incredible pressure for anyone, especially someone so young, to have so much piled on them in terms of that responsibility. I hope he has someone he can just let loose with.
And listen, if you can take that devil dick, you'll be all right.
Well, I hope his spirit and his mind are still at the front of his attention, because I don't want to see him self-destruct what he's creating. And we know people can do that when they achieve a certain amount of fame and success and they don't have the infrastructure to handle it.
Right.
And I really hope that's not the case here.
Listen, honey, I feel your pain.
Yeah.
Feast of Fun celebrating 3,000 podcasts. Please go to GoFundMe.com/Feast of Fun 3000 and give us a dollar. There's just every person listening to the show, just give $1.
We'd be there.
We'd do it right now.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll start streaming right away.
Get that stuff.
Can you say the URL again? Because when I go to feastoffun.com.
No, it's gofundme.com/feastoffun3000.
Oh.
Yeah.
Or you can go to feastoffun.com/donate.
Yes.
And make a one-time donation.
And one of the best ways to support the podcast is to become a Plus member. And you can become a Plus member at feastoffun.com/plus. Because your contribution to the show is what makes the show happen. We wouldn't be able to do it for 16 years like we've been doing it if it weren't for people like you who have stepped up and become a member. Somebody like Damon, who's a member of Feast of Fun.
Love you both. Since I've been listening to you since 2008. Love you both so much.
How did you discover the podcast?
Because my partner at the time, Matt, gave me this new thing called an iPod. And he put in this thing called a podcast that I had never heard of before. And I'm like, what's a podcast? And he said, well, it's kind of like radio without commercials, without censorship. Mm-hmm. These two incredible guys in Chicago just doing all these. Matt did. Yeah, he had found you online. And he knew.
I feel the same way about him.
He knew that I would love your show, love your energy, love the discussions. And he was absolutely correct, as he is about many, many things in life. I just listened to you and I heard the interviews you were doing. And I was like, someday I want to be on that show. Someday I want to be on that show so badly. Aww. And so I just listened and listened. And then
he said he wanted to.
I wanted to be. I heard you doing what you're doing, I'm like, yeah. I want to be on that show and promote my book once I have a book to promote. And so I listened and listened and then reached out to you guys. I took that step, which I encourage everyone to do. Just take that step, send that email. And you responded. And I flew out here in the middle of winter in Chicago in 2009. And the rest is history.
But you also did a podcast where you were interviewing soap opera stars.
I was doing We Love Soaps TV, where I was doing interviews with soap opera stars. All clothes, by the way. So it reminded me, it's like when people have their facade on, yes. It's so much better to talk to people naked. But your show has helped me personally, professionally, spiritually, and I know it has for so many people. I know you get so much of the criticism and you hear more of the bad stuff than the good stuff.
I don't hear a lot of the bad stuff.
But most of there's so much more good stuff. So many more people who are so grateful to you. You hear from people who grew up listening to your show, how much you've shaped and influenced them in such a wonderful way. And please don't ever, ever, ever lose touch with that.
Thank you. And you know, I think for me, it's not the negativity. It's just the physical struggle and the COVID pandemic making things more expensive, more difficult. And I know that people are just like have a lot of their own struggles. So the fact that we come together and that people do subscribe when they can is really extraordinary to me, because that's what keeps me motivated in doing it.
Yeah. You gotta pay for fun sometimes.
Well, and part of it is just, you know, it's having people listening to the show and interacting and sharing the program with their friends. That to me is like when I see that when people like post the podcast in their Instagram feed, to me, I'm just like, oh my God, thank you so much, you know, because it's not, you know. Listen, we're very critical of social media on the show, so the social media companies are not going to be like, oh, well, Feast of Fun, go ahead, promote your show on our social media. If you post feastoffun.com on Facebook or Instagram.
Buried,
banned, blocked.
I could post a photo of myself, and it's just, you know, it's several hundred likes or whatever, but I post something that deals with the podcast, and it's two or three likes. It just gets shadow banned.
80% of the people who follow me on Facebook are listeners of the podcast. Mm-hmm. And I do that because I when they make a friend request, I go, let's see, is this person queer? Is this a person who, you know, is this a fake profile? So I look at the content and then I reach out to them and say, thank you so much for becoming a friend.
Thank you for being a friend.
Thank you for being a friend. And I said, how did you hear about me, or what makes you want to be friends with me in the first place? And they go, because I listen to Feast of Fun.
I saw you on Instagram.
I like your dick pics. And if you want to send us dick pics, you can follow us on Instagram, Fausto Fernos.
And Mark Fillion.
And Damon L. Jacobs.
Yeah. And you can always mail us at mail@feastoffun.com. Looking forward to hearing from you. If we've inspired you, if we've been a companion through the years and stuff, write to us. And we'll read some of these as we approach our 3,000th episode anniversary or milestone.
Well, you know, our 3,000th episode is going to be a big thing. So we have a lot of cool stuff planned for it. And that's coming around our wedding anniversary.
Soon. It's coming soon.
It's going to come around our wedding.
Yeah. I don't know if it's going to, it'll be before then probably, because it's only like
in October.
20 shows away.
So. Yeah. So somewhere in the end of September, beginning October, 3,000 episodes of Feast of Fun, lots of new stuff. Go to gofundme.com/feastoffun3000. Honey, American Express will do nicely. Thank you.
Yeah, not MasterCard.
And Damon, not MasterCard.
If people want to follow your...
Gina knew back then.
Yeah,
she knew it back then, Gina, that American right Express. She was not going to talk about MasterCard and Private Dancer.
You know, you could also just send a check. We can set up an account, Bitcoin, anything you wanted. Any way that you can get us money, we can deal with it. We used to have somebody in China who would put money in a book and mail it to me. I do miss those, Eric.
It was
been
great.
A while.
It was a thrill to get cash in a book, because it was like, even though, you know, it's like,
You know what? It made a huge difference.
It made a huge difference. It a and huge, it was very exciting to receive this like spy novel, you know, like the book is like, you're
well,
like,
the book. I read the books too. The books were good,
but like he would send money in the book and you're like, oh my God, this is like a, you know, underground
subterfuge.
Yeah. Something international spies kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Because if you send money in cash in the mail, it's going to get, someone's going to take it.
No. They're not going to take it.
But if you stick it inside a book, they can't.
Just write it in a letter. Kinda, you put it inside of a teddy bear.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing.
This teddy bear is filled with cocaine and a knife.
And Damon, if people want to find out more about the joy of aging, where do they go?
I would say the joy of gay aging or gay just aging. joyofgayaging.com.
Okay. And otherwise, Damon L. Jacobs?
DamonLJacobs.com. Don't forget the L. DamonLJacobs.com. Marriage and Family Therapist.
Marriage and Family Therapist.
Based author, in New York City.
And yeah. Keep an eye advocate. Out for yeah. for your new video interview series, Splish Splash.
Tub Talks.
Tub Talks with Damon. Coming to YouTube.
Consider changing it to Splish Splash.
Well, I like Tub Talks because it thinks like TED Talks.
Oh, I see.
It's a spin. Tub
but
Talks.
But see, Splish Splash sounds more, you know. Playful. Will you? I'll do
incorporate
it.
Incorporate Splish Splash in there somewhere.
But you got to get me a nice tub. I don't want to be
hotel
cold.
Now.
But see that I don't want to be cold when we do it. You know, I'd be like freezing.
I'll keep you warm.
Do you have Epsom salt baths?
Yes. Yeah. Guess the water candles. Stays very warm. It's only like 10 minutes, so it's like you won't get cold.
I'm gonna get cold.
I'll
Are you sure?
Warm. I'll keep you warm.
All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye. Thank you.